The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I think it's interesting. I do still kind of believe that we're messing up real art with our fake art.
That's okay, though, because Caravaggio would not mind. He definitely would. He would probably kill someone.
He would say, get out Caravaggio. Of here. This is my artist's studio. You're putting lines on my paper.
Caravaggio was Italian, not French.
Botticelli noodles.
The rat is the cook. What's the regrettably, we are all out of wine.
This is a peasant dish.
A peasant dish. I watched Ratatouille and I thought about you the whole time.
Welcome to The Crunch. It is your boy, Ethan.
Hey, I'm Patrick. I have a question. Is that a tattoo on your arm?
Wait, what are you talking about?
Is that a tattoo on your arm?
Where? Which arm? This one?
No, the other one.
No, I don't have anything on this arm.
No, the other one. You have two.
Do you think I have a tattoo on my other arm?
Right. It looked like you had like a henna on your arm. Did you get a tattoo?
Did I get a tattoo?
It looks like... Listen, did you get a tattoo? You have to tell me these things. It's in your contract.
Contract is what? I mean, maybe
it's in your friend contract.
Maybe I got a little freaky and decided, you know, before Patrick's wedding, maybe I'll do something that I've always wanted to do.
Did you actually get a tattoo?
It's a temporary tattoo of Our Lady of Guadalupe. It's
I was
going to
say, that's a pretty big
tattoo.
It's a big
tattoo for it being a spur of the moment decision. It's funny because...
Yeah, second of all, we were going to do roll-up sleeves at the wedding, but I guess now we're not.
Oh, I can take it off. It's not there forever. Emily on my team had these tattoos. The brand is called Prison Tattoos, which is just, I think, interesting. And it was for Our Lady of Guadalupe's. And so we put them all on as kind of like a bonding thing. And we sent it in to the Focus people so that they could put a picture of us up on the training videos. And mm-hmm. they look at us. We're tattooed. Because they look very real. But I FaceTimed, or Emma FaceTimed me like that night, like right after we did it. I said, hey, I got a tattoo. And she just went, uh-huh. Like she just, it was not even interested in playing the game with me. It was just like, sure you did. But then I was FaceTiming her later, like the next day, and it still lasted. And I just kind of like stretched my hands over my head. She goes, it looks so real when you do that. And I'm like, well,
it does.
Maybe it's because I got the body for it, you know? Maybe this is my time.
Listen, tattoos look good on two types of arms, muscly arms and skinny arms.
Skinny,
I have
white
in-between arms. So
I think I could get, I think I could make it happen. I don't know.
My forearms are barely muscly.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's that weird, like halfway in-betweensies.
Sure.
Where like they still look fat, they just don't jiggle. One of these days I'll have those lifter forearms.
Ripped.
Like Chris Pratt.
Oh, yeah.
I want those Chris Pratt
forearms. For a second in my mind.
Look up that man's forearms and tell me you don't want those.
In my mind, I saw Chris Padgett's forearms, which is a very different image.
Nope, not different at all.
He's the same. So what I was saying before we recorded the show.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I got so much gas going through my system right now.
You need a Gas X.
I do need a Gas X. We also stopped and got slushies on the way back from Catholic Charities, which might not have been... the best.
You're
idea.
Drinking this, you're like, oh, this is the consistency of my...
last night we watched the movie Anastasia, and you asked if it was on Disney Plus. It's not a Disney film. It was made
by...
No,
it's not, but it is on Disney Plus,
Fox,
right?
Animation. I don't think so. As I don't think...
Oh, they didn't buy Fox. They bought... Well, yeah, they did.
Did they? Oh, it might be.
I don't know.
But it was...
Anyway.
Oh,
I do want to clarify. We're recording 2 days after the other
the last
episode. So...
Very little
so Ethan,
has happened.
Yeah, very
I still
little
have
has
diarrhea.
Happened. Yeah. I want people to know that no, Ethan has not had diarrhea for a week
two
and a
weeks,
half.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go on.
Hopefully, God willing.
Yeah, really.
I talk about my
You're not allowed to leave.
I talk about me getting rid of my diarrhea in the same way that seminarians talk about getting ordained one day. God willing, you know. anyway. So we watched Anastasia. I'd never seen it before. Rasputin in that movie, very creepy, definitely sells his soul to the devil and uses the powers of Satan to try and kill people. And it was just like, I don't know. I mean, when I was a kid, I'd probably be like, oh man, that's super scary. But looking at that now, I'm like, that's probably what happened.
What happened?
That's probably what Rasputin did.
Rah-rah Rasputin.
I did convince
the Russian queen.
I did convince one of my teammates that that song was in the movie. And then at the end, she goes, wait, where was the song? And I was like, oh, silly. It's not. A pop song.
But yeah, he definitely, like, he's like the... this is going to get political.
Come on.
He's the Jared Kushner of ancient Russia.
Ooh.
Of Tsarist Russia. Like, he got his way in there somehow.
Yeah.
And he did. No one could get him out.
No one could get him out. It's just crazy how many times they tried to kill him and he just didn't die. Like, there's no way.
Yeah.
I suppose lots of things can happen. It was 1917, right? They hadn't really figured out how to kill people, but
nature did it for them.
Yeah. But there, part of me is like, definitely.
Again, diarrhea killed people back then.
Hey.
I'm pretty sure.
There was definitely something else going on. Something otherworldly, if you know what I mean.
Or he was just really good at faking.
Or he was really good at being drowned and then not dying. You know, like, I don't know how you can fake that.
No, that's fair.
They tied him up and threw him into a river, and he lived. Yeah.
The Russians are usually better at killing people.
The dude was like Johnny Knoxville, but in Tsarist Russia.
I meant in the sense that, like, he was very good at, because I'm pretty sure the story goes, like, the queen would turn to him for advice.
Yeah, when the king was out at war.
Yeah, and her son was sick, and so she turned to him for, like, healing and stuff.
Sure.
And I think he was able to convince people that he had magic powers, either because he actually was, like, soul of the devil, or because this is just a transition into something that's barely worth mentioning. Or he was just very good at, like, faking magical powers, like psychics.
Right.
Or
he was a kook.
People who read enneagram tests.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, that's what I want to talk about today. I keep seeing enneagram on
First
my
of all, let's say
Instagram.
It, let's say it correctly. Enneagram.
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 Enneagram sounds like something that goes up your butt.
Enneagram sounds like the thing that singer who sings the sad songs would
that's
write.
That's Enneagram.
Enneagram. Oh, okay. Sorry, that's my bad.
Enneagram does sound like, oh my gosh, what's that? What's something that, what's that? What's the thing that goes, the pill that goes up? That's like, that's a suppository, but there's another word for it.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like Enneagram. What is it?
What is it, Patrick?
Do you know what it is?
Enema.
Enema! That's what it sounds like.
Let's take an enemagram
together. I just
shouted
enema at work. That's fun. What?
This podcast is now the Enemagram podcast.
The Enemagram podcast. But yeah, I keep seeing it, and it's literally the funniest thing. I was talking to Teresa about it, because she and I both hate Myers-Briggs.
Yeah.
And she is very convinced that anagram, whatever, is demonic, and I don't doubt it. I think Myers-Briggs is somehow racist. Everything that came out of that time
in
history.
You guys remember 2020 where Patrick thought everything was racist because he read one book?
No, this is not because I read that book. This is because I have a. Okay, first of all, I did read that book, and apparently IQ tests discriminated against black people. So who knows what else did?
Yeah, that's true.
I keep seeing people like post, I'm a type 2,
mm-hmm.
I'm a type 3, and I saw someone read the type 2 description, and the type 2 description was like very passionate about things, gets really passionate about things you're interested in.
Oh,
I'm like, That's everyone.
Only a few people are like that.
Only a few people get passionate about things they're interested in. And then there's other descriptions of people. It's like you get very angry when people hurt the ones you love. And I'm like, yeah, that's again, that's everyone. And so I think that enneagram.
It's hard not to say enemagram now, isn't it?
Enemagram is yeah, it's just another one of those things where it's like they tell you what you want to hear. They tell you good things about you, and you're like, oh, this is my identity. My identity is this now. It's exactly like people who still use horoscopes.
Right. I wouldn't go so far as to say, like, it's demonic. I know that Michael O'Brien is not a fan of them, which makes me not a fan of them because I trust him implicitly. But
he's your Cal Newport.
He is. He really is. And I'm fine with that.
What if Jesus was your Cal Newport?
Oh, huh? Man. flash me back to a Steubenville talk in 2013.
If Steubenville conferences were still happening,
I know. Let me say my opinion on Enneagrams. So, the one time I was, don't put a mask on. No, come back. Not over your headphones. That just looks unwieldy.
It's over my headphones.
So my only experience really with the Enneagram is one time I was riding when I didn't have a car last year or 2 years ago. It was 2 years ago. Woohoo. When I didn't have a car 2 years ago, I was carpooling to a wedding with these two focus missionaries. They were girls. And they were talking about they're like listening to an Enneagram podcast and talking about Enneagrams pretty much the whole trip.
There's a podcast about it?
It was a several hour drive. And so they said, Ethan, what Enneagram type are you? And I said, I don't know. I really don't like it when people try to assign an Enneagram type to me. And then they said, oh, you're definitely a four. And I was like, did you not hear what I just said?
So I get that with with the Myers-Briggs all the time. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know if I'm like an ENXP because I don't know if I'm a T or an F. And they're like, oh, you're totally a T. That's such a T thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that actually happened to me at a Myers-Briggs training workshop.
You went to a Myers-Briggs training workshop.
Yeah, they were required at Franciscan. You know, place that's supposed to love Jesus?
Yeah.
And not, anyway.
I don't think, here's the thing. I don't think it's a bad to put words to things that you experience.
It's not
right.
Bad.
That's good. Like that part of those tests is helpful because maybe there's something about you that's like hard to explain and hard to define. And it's good for you to know that about yourself so that you can speak about it to other people, the people that you love and help explain, and then maybe work on it if it's negative. Outside of that, it's pretty useless. And I do think that temperaments are much more helpful than Enneagram and Myers-Briggs. Just because choleric, sanguine, phlegmatic, and melancholic, I think there's a lot more fluidity between all four of the areas. And it's not
as rigid.
It's not as rigid. Yeah. It's not just, oh, I'm this and I'm only this and this is who I am. It's like, no, I'm choleric, sanguine, but like I can also see the influences that melancholic and phlegmatic people have on me, you know, and like how that works out. And so I think it's helpful. That's probably out of all of them, that's the one I would pick, mostly because it's the ancient one that like the Greeks used.
Yeah. And I always thought that Myers-Briggs was kind of like
hacky.
Cause it was really funny because they would give us a worksheet that had all the 16 types on it in a table.
Uh-huh.
It was a table. And she handed them out and she was talking about like, and remember, like, we're not trying to put you in a box. And I raised my hand and I was like, all of the types are in boxes.
You're that guy in the class.
Yeah.
Huh?
I was like, they're all in boxes. I was very anti it, and the more it went on, the more anti I got.
This is why I love doing a podcast with you, because sometimes I, like, if I was in that class with you, I would be so up in arms. I'd be so angry. I'd be like, this is garbage. I can't believe you're making us do this. On my own, I would probably like be with my other friends who I don't have a podcast with, and I'd be like, this sucks, and they'd be like, why are you upset about this? And I'd be like, all right, fine, whatever. But if I was with you, you'd be like, yeah, this does suck. And I'd be like, yeah. And that's
we're
why
like throwing chairs, you know.
That's why we've been doing this for 3 years, is because none of my other friends will indulge me.
it's just an irrational hatred that I have for Myers. Sure. I did read a book about it,
of course.
Origins of it. Yeah, and the people who created it. It's kind of like those other things we talk about, like the Kinsey Institute or Planned Parenthood, where like they don't really talk about their founders as much.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
who was like, Myers? Kinda, who was Briggs? What are they up to these
who
days?
Who was Myers-Briggs? Well, it's a mom and a daughter combo.
Okay. Why do they have different last names? I guess the daughter might have gotten married.
Well, one of them's last name was Briggs Myers, and then the other one's last name was Briggs. So it was Myers-Briggs.
I understand.
Yeah. Yeah, so the daughter, the mom was like, her daughter was like a science experiment, essentially. She's like, can I make the perfect daughter?
Oh my gosh.
By just like being really like, can I figure out how to like really make her like a top achiever,
ugh,
right? And can I make her like, it was kind of weird. And so they developed this together, and originally the test was sold as a way to determine aptitude in the workplace.
Okay.
It wasn't like, oh, what kind of person are you? It was, are you the kind of person we should hire?
Can you produce?
Yeah, exactly. And so there were certain personality types that they wouldn't hire. So there was a natural
Racist.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like there's like, oh, well, now we have this external non-racial measuring stick that we can assign, like, oh, well, it just so happens that this racial group falls mostly into this personality type and that personality type isn't hireable. It's one of those things where it's like backdoor racism, like poll taxes and literacy tests.
Mm-hmm.
And IQ tests had that as well. Standardized testing still has racial implications. So yeah, I was before I read the book, I was convinced that Myers-Briggs was demonic, and then after I read it, I was like, oh wait, no, it was racist.
Ah, cool. Yes. What's the difference? Patrick, not to stop the flow of the podcast, but in exactly a week from right now, I guess I'm in Central Time. Dang it.
Well, yeah, but it's still, like less than exactly a week from right now.
Even though a week from right now, you will be married.
It's true.
As of
we'll be taking pictures.
When this podcast comes out, you'll have already been married. So everybody say, yay.
Yay.
But
yeah,
as of recording, this is a week away. I would be, if I didn't already have diarrhea.
I'd have double diarrhea.
I would get it again.
Honestly, we're just happy that it's happening at this point.
Yeah.
You know, we're just very excited.
I'm so excited. I can't wait to party down in Florida, in the land of the party.
I'm excited to see which one of us cries first.
You or Phoebe, or you or me?
No, you or me.
I cry at every wedding.
I know. Which one of us is going to cry first?
It's going to be you.
Probably.
A man like yourself, knowing what I know about you.
A little blubbery baby.
A little blubbery baby. I just can imagine Phoebe walking down the aisle, and then you're just gone. Bye, Patrick. See you later.
If I start crying, Phoebe's going to start crying.
Exactly.
But she's not allowed to cry because she's going to mess up her makeup.
She got makeup on.
Yeah.
Got to keep that fresh. Curly Phoebes. Got to be looking good.
At Curly
Phoebes. At Curly Phoebes on Instagram. Oh, frick. I don't have a hot take. I started recording too fast.
Just do roulette. Just do roulette.
Can you do a roulette on the Twitter data thing?
That
would be sick if I could just click random.
Yeah, here's what you got to do. Just hit Control F and then just pick a word.
Okay. Give me a word.
Chastise.
0 for 0.
Zero results. Okay. Chaste. That's what I was thinking. Hold chaste. On.
Chaste.
This actually isn't that bad. Well, this isn't. Mine was in 2017.
Is this? Are we in the hot take time machine right now?
Oh, dang it. I forgot to introduce the hot take time machine.
Hot take time machine. Welcome to the hot take time machine, the part of the show where we take a look, where we control F on all of our old tweets to find things because we didn't search them before the cast. If you have a hot take and you would like to embarrass yourself, send it in. It's a good exercise in humility, a good exercise in supporting this show, because we desperately need content in the age of Patrick getting married and having to record two podcasts in 1 week, baby.
Baby, let's go.
Patrick.
My hot take comes from 2017 because I just control F'd the word chastity. And I found there was a meme a while back that was like, at A&M, howdy can mean hello, goodbye. Sorry there, partner. Didn't mean to bump into you. Do you remember that meme?
No, but I know a lot of people from A&M, and so I know that to be true.
Yeah, it was like at our college, this word can mean blank, 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 blank. And so I put, at Franciscan University, emotional chastity can mean anything you want. No one knows what it means. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
That must have been confusing.
To whom?
To everyone at Franciscan. Why was it so hard to just be normal at that school?
I don't know. I think it's because... I don't know. I don't actually know. It is hard for
you
everyone
always
to be
have
normal
insight,
at that school.
But it seems like it seems like, let me get this straight, right?
Yeah.
You get a bunch of Catholics together who all love the Lord and are desiring to be youth ministers and Steubenville speakers or whatever, that at least, well, maybe not, they would be normal, but at least they'd kind of have a semblance of like, this is how to live well. But also they're 18 when they get there, so...
It's
hard to defeat the power of biology, you know?
Yeah, it's a problem. It's the word, when the word freshman is tacked onto whatever you are, you immediately become 20 IQ points. Ah, there we go. Dumber.
Yeah, it's tough.
But I think this Franciscan University is a good... I think Franciscan is great. And I think that there's a lot of good there. And I think that people are a little... people there are a little too cognizant of the way that makes it different. And I think everybody thinks they're not a Franny, which I think is the funny thing.
Yes.
I think everyone thinks they're not one of those Frannies. Which means that they're not as alone as they think they are. But I think that the what Franciscan is in the minds of people that go there is this like very sheltered bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that, because people do go out into the outside world. But I think it's a great example of why the Benedict option wouldn't work.
Yeah.
It's because that community would become, in effect,
a cult.
Impotent.
Oh.
When it comes to evangelization.
Yeah.
Because even now, like, talking about people outside of the Franciscan bubble, there's a code, and there's like different understandings of the way things work and a different vocabulary, and it becomes impossible to ingratiate anyone that comes from outside into it unless they come in as a freshman. And people that transfer in always feel like an outsider.
I don't know, I did it in like 3 days.
I think that's because of the podcast.
That's true.
You're like, hey everybody, households, am I right?
And everyone,
and they
was
were like, one of us, one of us.
You guys want to go to the Lululemon Lounge with me later?
The Louis Liz Lobby.
Thank you. I could never get it right.
You never get it. Hey, we're having a podcast, and somehow everyone knew what you were
everyone
saying.
Everyone knew.
Hey, remember when Scott Hahn walked in 10 minutes after our episode ended?
I always tell people, like, hey, I have a picture with Scott Hahn. And they're like, no way. And it's a picture of him blurry, waving in the background as I'm looking in the other direction.
one of these days, that's going to be an iconic image.
It really
is. It's going to be like one of those, like,
where were you when these two great saints crossed paths? In like 100 years, it's going to be the cover of some book about me. Maybe Scott Hahn, not me. I have a
that's in the book about Scott Hahn's life.
Yeah.
he was always Scott Hahn, the patron saint of waving.
Patron saint of waving. I have a tweet here from June 7th, 2014. I presume that this is to the tune of the song about library cards from Arthur.
Oh, what a bop.
And it says in all capital letters, having fun's not hard when you have a chastity card. Having fun's not hard when you have a chastity card.
You repeated it?
No, I just repeated it again for emphasis for your sake.
Ethan, you posted cringe.
I did.
You're going to lose subscribers.
I thought it would be 0 retweets, 7 likes. I thought it would be very popular. I thought everyone would get the reference to the Arthur show. I thought everyone would think I was cool for having a chastity card.
It's a very niche tweet.
It was. It is still to this day.
Did you ever... I had... How many chastity cards did you have by the end of high school?
Let's answer the question. How many chastity cards do I have in my wallet currently?
How many?
Hold on.
Wait, do you actually have them still? I tossed those out.
Let me look.
And check it out. Still chased.
True love waits.
You have a
March
6th, 2010.
2010?
Hold on. You have a 10-year-old chastity card in your... Hold on.
I got another one from 2014.
No. Go back to the 2010 one. You have one from 2010? Ethan, we were like 13. We were like 8.
I got one from 2013.
We weren't 8 in 2010.
I got one from 2012.
Why do you still carry that?
And I have an expired Target gift card.
Gift cards don't expire. You mean a coupon?
Look at them all. I have 5 in my wallet at any point in time, just in case somebody walks up to me and says, "Hey, are you chaste?" I can say yes.
Yes. I renewed my chastity.
No, let me tell you this.
Oh my gosh.
I've always had this image of my mind of like when I propose to the woman that I'm going to marry, that I pull out these chastity cards and I make them rain. And the closer I get to potentially being engaged to somebody, the more I realize that's just a bad idea. But I have them just in case.
I can't believe you carried them for this long.
Because they were always like pitching this idea of like, if you save these and give them to your wife on your wedding night, how beautiful will that be? And I was like, you're right, that would be beautiful. But I was 14. But I still have them as like a goof so I can pull them out and show people.
Yeah, it's very, very funny. It's a goof, yeah.
I made you laugh, you know?
For laughing having
fun's not hard.
10 years old in your wallet.
Having fun's not hard when you have 5 chastity cards. That 10 years is a long time. That was my 8th grade confirmation retreat when I signed that one.
How many wallets have you had since then?
One, maybe 2.
Really?
This wallet is very old. It's got a string hanging. The ID flap is about to fall off.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that is
an
old
wallet.
Mine is like really thin.
Ooh.
And new. It's got like a bunch of pockets though. Phoebe got it for me. Phoebe's very good at giving me gifts.
That's nice.
She has given me most of the things that are in my pockets and she gave me a watch and she gave me this.
Oh.
And yeah. She gave me a Kindle for my birthday 1 year, which is like a very on brand gift.
Dang.
So yes. My wallet is not a foldable wallet. It's very thin.
I would like one. So @CurlyPhoebes. If you're looking for a way to,
that's @CurlyPhoebs.
@CurlyPhoebs.
@CurlyPhoebes.
Phineas and Phoebes.
With a Z, excuse
Phoebes.
Me. Yeah, go join. If you have curly hair, @CurlyPhoebes. We'll do that. I told you about that thing. My dad's friend was a radio show host and his wife was a singer. And whenever they mentioned his wife, they would say NaomiBradshaw.com. So every time we mentioned Phoebe, we'll say, I was talking to @CurlyPhoebes the other day.
NaomiBradshaw.com. Hey, you said you had a topic in our text message, in our pre-recording text rendezvous.
Yeah, that's true. We do text.
Patrick and I text every day.
Good morning. Good night.
I miss you.
What do you have for lunch?
How many eggs do you have in the fridge?
Sailboat emoji. You know,
what?
The normal stuff.
What's a sailboat?
You don't text
What's
sailboat
the emojis sailboat
to your
emoji?
Boys?
What does that mean?
How is you going to know that you guys are, if that we were on a boat, if I want a boat ride for 3, you would be one of the 3 people that I took.
Is this a reference to something?
Well, that was a reference to I'm on a boat by Lonely Island.
What's the boat emoji, though?
The sailboat emoji?
Yeah.
Just a boat.
What does it mean?
It doesn't mean it's just a boat.
Okay.
I used to use a sailboat emoji. So on my phone, I put everybody's full name in the contact in my phone because I hate not having people's full names in my phone. And so I don't put like first name mom. I'm like, no. My mom's first name is Della. Her nickname is mom. And so I use the nickname field a lot. And so when I was in high school, I would like if I shipped 2 people, I would take 2 boats and I would put them next to their name.
I thought maybe it was saying like if I send you the sailboat emoji, that means that I like the cut of your jib. And this is like me approving how you sail.
No, it's just a sailboat emoji. My dad likes to send random emojis instead of saying like thanks. He'll just go dancing bat guy or
octopus.
Skateboarder. Octopus. That's not a random emoji.
It's pretty random. LOLXD.
I use the sailboat emoji. I use the octopus emoji all the
Maybe
time.
I should implement the sailboat emoji more often.
The octopus emoji on like if you have an emoji on your on your phone, the sailboat emoji. Or sorry, I
you keep
sailboat.
Saying
the
that.
Octopus emoji is hilarious.
I love the chicken on an emoji.
It's so I really love the octopus. When you raise your eyebrows, the octopus has like 8 wrinkles on its forehead. It's great.
That's funny. Hey, thank you for listening to this episode of The Crunch. Sorry to interrupt what I'm sure is a stimulating intellectual conversation, but I wanted to pause the episode real quick to let you hear from some of our sponsors. We will be back right after this.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You ready to hop into the topic?
Hop into the topic time machine?
The top take time machine? Did you? Are you going to put the Obama one in last week?
I put the
week?
Obama one in. I put the Obama one in the one that we did last week. It's already up.
Okay.
Obama's up.
Obama's up.
He's
Obama's
at
there.
Air Force One's at cruising altitude.
Let's keep the Obama one for the next month.
Okay.
I think up until Election Day, we should.
Oh my gosh.
We should keep the Obama drink. Okay, so I am working on a book. Everyone knows this if you listen to the show for the past 2 years.
We've been working on a book and a merch store for years.
Yeah, that's the thing.
At the crunch.
Listen, God saved mankind over the course of thousands of years.
Okay.
So give me some more time to work on this book.
No comment on the merch store.
No comment on the merch store. That's not in my court. That's the thing. So I was working on the book. I finished it over quarantine. my chair just fell. I was working on it over quarantine, and I finished a rough draft, and I sent it in to a publisher that shall remain nameless, and I got some feedback. It turns out I didn't stay on topic. I went off topic a couple of times, and I wasn't as focused on the point of the book, which is a little bit of a wound to my pride, but hey, you can't win them all. And it's, you know, who would, you know, I guess, big shock, you know, I didn't do it perfect the first
yes.
time. Okay, so the point of the book is supposed to be about brotherhood, and so I wanted to kind of clarify my thoughts on what brotherhood is.
And then are you going to send the main them points, this podcast and be like, look, see, I know what I'm talking about. Publish my book.
Publish my book. I put the whole podcast on. And before the ladies out there turn off the podcast, I've given talks on this in the past, and women seem very receptive to this, especially because it kind of helps them know, like, what to look for, like how to be a better sister to their friends that are guys, or like what to look for in a fella, you know, all that sort of stuff. So I don't know. First off, like, what do you think of when you hear the word brother?
I think of my brothers. Mm-hmm. I think of a male that you're especially yeah. close to, that you maybe share more of yourself with, that you can do a lot of things with.
Yeah.
That you love, probably.
That's one of the weirdest things, though, is that when we call people brother, right? It's like it refers to our blood relatives.
Refers to our love,
but like,
for WWE.
Brother.
Hey, brother.
But, you know, referring to someone that's not related to you as your brother is like a very Christian thing.
Yes.
You know, there's this kind of like humanist idea that everyone on earth is your brother, you know, that sort of thing. But it's more realized in the church. And Ratzinger has a book on this called The Meaning of Christian Brotherhood.
Yes.
I think it's a book that I don't read enough, considering that
it's good.
I'm writing a book on exactly that. But he talks about the way that Christian brotherhood works is that it's very boundaried. Like, if you're not baptized, strictly speaking, you're not a Christian, and so you can't be someone's brother in Christ if you're not baptized. But that being said, anybody can become your brother or sister in Christ just by virtue of being baptized. And so he says it's like it's this new, the church is a new thing where it's like it was hard to become someone's brother in the city of Athens, right? The Athenians called themselves like brothers. It was hard to become an Athenian,
mm-hmm.
but it's not hard to become a Christian. And so this permeable membrane, right, is kind of unique to Christianity. But it's not just about a relationship. I think brotherhood is something that you can become good at or be worse at.
Okay, yeah.
Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So being someone's brother means that you are a good man, like, first off, but it's something that's a little more specific than that. I think the core of brotherhood is that you can't be a brother without being a son first, and you can't be a son without having a father. And so I think brotherhood is helping, is being an image of the father to other people, and then also, like, growing in sonship, becoming a better son of the father. Does that make sense? Cool.
I think it's weird because does that mean that I have to be my younger brother's dad?
No.
You know? Like, if brotherhood is kind of... Yeah, it is. It is brother to brother, and you do have to be sons first, and it's easier when you have the same biological father, because then it's like, oh, yeah, we definitely sprung from that dude's loins. Like, that's... That's where it happened, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's a natural bond there. But then I think so many people struggle with their earthly fathers that when you have the idea of Christian brotherhood and this idea of, like, we're all sons together of the Father, even among committed Catholics, right, who are disciples of Jesus and desire to follow the Lord, desire to grow in holiness, you still struggle to get that brotherhood because – so few people really believe that, like, their heavenly father loves them to the extent that God does. And so I think it makes it harder necessarily for Christian brotherhood to happen, especially in America when, I mean, the family's getting broken down, you know? And then if the family's not getting broken down, it's everything in between, like, the individual and the society at large that's getting broken down. Like, you don't have... This is a kind of a tangent, but, like, you don't have bowling leagues anymore, and you don't have like clubs. Like, the Boy Scouts are just the Scouts, and what do they even do? You know, like all these things where you could, maybe if your family was less than stellar, right, you could at least find some kind of positive father figure and some positive brotherly figures in these other things.
Just naturally, like, just in the community,
naturally, right, in the parish, youth groups, like, all these things. Because there used to be small to moderate sized organizations and associations that existed outside the family. So you could have that. But I think now, and it's always been hard, right? It's always been hard to know the love of the Father. But I think now, in the culture that we live in that's so atomized and isolated, it's much more difficult to, like, meet somebody who is a Christian and, like, feel that brotherhood with them quickly and easily. Because, like you were saying, it's a virtue that you have to build and get better at. And I think that even within our own families, we aren't being challenged to, like, get better at brotherhood. I don't know.
I want to like talk about what you said. You said, like, does that mean that I have to be my little brother's dad? I think there's the yes and no. There's a yes and no to that.
The both and of Catholicism.
The both and of Catholicism. Because, like, no, you obviously, like, fatherhood is what? The catechism.
Here we go.
Describes God's fatherhood as both, like, loving kindness and origin and authority. And I changed the catechism.
You changed the catechism?
Yeah, I totally did. No, I just used different words to make them a little more palatable to people who don't use origin and authority on a daily basis. Yes. I changed it to, yeah, fatherhood is created by is characterized by creative authority and loving kindness. And so creative authority means, like, the authority that comes from the fact that you created something.
Yes.
And you don't have that with your brothers. You didn't create them. You also don't have, but you do have loving kindness, right? That you can, and you have some authority over them in the sense that, like, when you're the oldest brother, you are delegated responsibilities from your parents to watch your siblings every so often.
That's right. I'm in charge.
Yeah, and that's the exact wrong way to approach right? Like, if you were that brother, like I was, your younger brother starts to resent you, and you should be able, if you, in order to grow in brotherhood, you should notice that they are resenting you and notice that you need to grow in kindness and love so that they don't come to resent you. And then similarly, there's a lot of situations when, in just our regular day-to-day lives, when we're with other people that are either younger or older than us and less experienced in something, when we have to kind of be a paternal figure in a little way. And so that in the book, I have a chapter on big brothers and little brothers. And I talk about how being a big brother prepares you for being a father, and being a little brother teaches you how to be a son.
Mm. So little brothers never get to learn how to be dads.
Sorry?
Little brothers never get to learn how to be dads.
That's the problem. No.
So you just have to keep having kids.
You just get infinite regression. I think, but that point is why the natural family isn't enough. It's because you need a universal family, because in that sense, then there's no limit to how many brothers and sisters you can have. The other thing they mentioned was like, they wanted me to be a little more clear on how to grow in brotherhood. Like, what did I mean by how to grow in brotherhood? Mm-hmm. And well, I kind of said it earlier, but I think that growing in brotherhood, I see like masculinity and then femininity as well as like a tree. It's rooted in the fact that you are a son or a daughter of the father, right? And the point of the tree is to grow and flower and bear fruit, right? And so the fruit of the tree is, you know, like fatherhood and motherhood. That's the end goal of your masculinity is fatherhood. Mm-hmm. The end goal of your femininity is motherhood. And that's the only functional difference between men and women is fatherhood and motherhood. There is a real difference there, but like the functional difference is a man becomes a father and a woman becomes a mother. And I think that if the root of the tree is fatherhood, the root of the tree is sonship and the fruit of the tree is fatherhood, then the trunk of the tree, like how tall it grows, is based on how good of a brother you are.
Yes.
And so that's the main image of the point that I try to make in the book. But they want to say, like, what do you mean by grow in brotherhood? And I just think it means like growing in virtue and deliberate practice, trying to like write a rule of life for yourself and see what does it mean to be a good father? What does it mean to be a good son practically? And then how can I continue to do those things? How have I done well in these things? How have I done poorly in these things recently? And continue to like examine yourself and see like how far along you are in your journey.
Yeah, I think that was Jesus's whole thing when he was here on earth knocking around was, what was the thing? They will know you are my disciples by your love for one another, right? He's mm-hmm. basically saying like the mark of whether or not you're a Christian is how good of a brother you are. Essentially. And so I don't think anything that you're saying is wrong at all. I just wish that there was more of an emphasis on it kind of in the church as a whole. Because we do, there's yeah. this like, this idea of like, we need masculinity as this whole thing, like this whole concept. You got Into the Breach, you know, all mm-hmm. this stuff. Knights of Columbus. We got to be men. You got to be a firefighter. You got to solve crimes as a detective in the force on the team. Like these are
on a train.
On a train with a knife in the parlor. And there's this idea of like, oh, we need to restore masculinity to what it is. You know, not have toxic masculinity. We also need to not have weak and impotent men. Young virile men need to make a reappearance.
We need young virile men.
And then also the same thing with...
I am a young, vibrant man.
We need the same thing with femininity, right? It's like reclaiming true femininity and the feminine genius and all these things. And I don't listen to any of those podcasts, so I have no idea what that's about.
Yeah.
But I think I think what we need to do is shift the conversation to be less about masculinity as a whole and then focus more on this idea of brotherhood because you get guys into these like men's groups. I see this on Tulsa's campus a lot. Like you have them in men's groups or they're in a Bible study or small group outside of the dudes who are like on a sports team, right? Who mm-hmm. naturally are very inclined towards virtue and growing in virtue because there's a very clear connection with like sport, you know, like if I
yeah.
practice and I fail, that's okay. I just have to keep practicing and practice well so that then I can do better when the time comes for me to be tested, right? Like that's just a very mm-hmm. easy, so like the translation to the spiritual life and then also the idea of working together. And if you're not getting along, then you're not going to be performing well. Like all these things lend themselves more towards good brotherhood. I mean, it's a good foundation for Christian brotherhood.
Yeah.
It's not perfect, obviously. But outside of that,
I was actually talking to, after I wrote the book and sent it in, I was like, oh, I need to interview more people. And so I started interviewing people. I interviewed this one guy who like started a men's group for, it was this Catholic men's group. But then I actually got to interview a former MLB player. He played for the Pirates and then he played for the Diamondbacks. And when he played on the Diamondbacks, he was there for like 3 months. Mm-hmm. He was there. He got traded in August, which means that I think late July anyway, which meant he had a couple of months before the postseason, and the Diamondbacks did not go to the postseason.
Of course.
And yeah, obviously everyone knew that. And one of their biggest players, I forget who it was, he would lead a weekly Bible study, like prayer group. They would meet in the
Jose Canseco.
Sorry?
Jose Canseco?
Is that who it was?
No, but he was a player, and I think he was not. I think there was some scandal about him.
Never mind. Anyway, well, probably not him. I don't remember the name. I didn't write it down. So he talked about the atmosphere. In that team was very like cohesive. They felt like they were on the same team. They felt like they were working together. And then someone started like a Bible study, a men's group out of that. And whoever wanted to come and pray, and one person would lead it and talk about what they're praying about, etc. And I think that's actually how he came back to the faith, because someone on his baseball team started a men's mm-hmm. group to talk about the faith, and they had this prior interest. They had this prior thing that united them, and then he was like, oh, well, I already know these guys from baseball. I might as well talk to them about Jesus too. And I think we put the cart before the horse in that sense of like, who wants to come and talk about Jesus with me to just anybody? Yeah. And then the only people who respond are going to be the people that are already looking for that. Whereas we should take our interests, our original interests, and say, who wants to go on a hike with me? You know, like, who likes hiking? Mm. And then you just go hiking with people. And then after a while, you're on a hike. You're going to start talking. You're going to talk about your faith, and they're going to talk about theirs.
If only this example was set for us by the most successful evangelist of the 20th century. Oh, wait, it
John Paul
it was. It was totally
actually,
set by him.
With Jan Turnstile. I don't actually know his name. I've been saying Jan Turnsky
since I borrowed a copy of St. John Paul the Great and His Five Loves by Jason Everett. Because it's a decent, like, quick little read about JP2, and I love reading about JP2. And when it started talking about Jan Turnowski, I was like, Jan Turnsky. Anyway, I do love JP2, and I think I'm going to start reading a lot more about him, because I just think he's just so him.
His canonization process started a month after his death. That's unheard of.
Him, Pier Giorgio. Like, I think we just need to look at the 20th century saints. Not that the people who are older than that are bad, but it's like we need to look at the example of the saints that have been closest to us in time, because I think that's going to give us the best praxis for, like, what do we do with this modern world? You know, like, what do we do about that? Mother Teresa, JP2, Pier Giorgio. Therese of Lisieux, yes, she was living in a convent, so it's a little bit different, but she still is a freaking stud.
Also 19th century. Yeah. But yeah.
Was she? Oh, I guess she got canonized in the last. Anyway.
She did, yeah.
That's neither here nor there. What I was saying is that's what I'm trying to do on campus a lot more, especially now during a global pandemic. This is the only way to evangelize, right? Is I can no longer just go out. I mean, in limited capacity, I can't just go out and meet people and say, hey, come to my Bible study, right? Because got to be 6 feet away, can't really shake their hand, can't really talk to them. What am I going to do? What I can do is say, okay, look, the chess club is having an event, right? Only 10 to 15 people are allowed into these, like, at TU's campus. That's kind of like the number that they're setting for, like, small groups for the first three-ish weeks. So I can go to the things that I care about, right? I can go and be at the chess club. I can go and see if there's a film club. I can go to the things that I already know about, right? And I can send my teammates to do the same, and I can become a part of those groups. And yeah, I'll invite people to Bible study. Yes, I'll invite people to mass. Yes, that will be a part of my conversations. And I'm not just going just to, like, use the group to meet these people. But it's something that I really care. And I think that is sometimes the vision that's talked about when it's like evangelization on a campus or anywhere, is like, do what you already like to do, then invite people. But so often the practicality is like, I'm in the Newman Center and I need to meet all these people at the Newman Center so that way I know that they're not going to say no, because I know that they're already Catholic, you know? But I think for even after graduation or after I leave the college campus, that's what you have to do anyway. But it goes back to what I was saying before, is that, like, those small clubs and organizations don't necessarily exist. Like, it's hard to get a group of people who are adults, like, let's have a hiking group that goes every, you know, every week. Maybe that can exist in some places, but I feel like it's not as common as it once was. So I don't really know how to do that.
I think the thing, and this is not a pandemic thing, but I think the answer is, like, if you know someone from work, everybody likes drinking.
Everybody likes drinking. Everybody loves Raymond. Those are kind of the two things that you need to know.
Those are kind of the two things. And everybody hates Chris.
Wasn't there another one about, what was his name?
Everybody tolerates.
What was the, my name is
Kevin
Earl.
James?
Okay. That's not, was my that was not Earl. Everybody loves Earl. It was just my name is Earl. Anyway. Just
my name is Earl. Yeah. I think.
You think.
No, there aren't. There aren't just hiking groups, right? But you can definitely just make one.
Right.
You know, I think,
and that would be a.
I don't think that people are as averse to community as we think. I think they're starved for it, and they know that.
Patrick Nevy, that's such a what? Great.
You just reminded me. So we listened to the legend Jonathan Reyes give talks this week, and he had just the best line about community ever.
Yeah, you mean the I hate the boys?
No.
Jonathan Reyes is not a boy.
He's not. He's a man. He said he was talking about this idea of we're lacking stable, cohesive associations, like, which is also about the family, but it's like for most of those groups outside of the family that we were talking about, like you're one person at work and you're one person at school and you're one person with your family and you're one person with your friends. Like there's no cohesion to our lives anymore, right? And he said this at the very end when he was talking about it. He said, just because communities are breaking down doesn't mean that people don't want community. And I was just like,
yeah.
Like, that's just such a good way to think about it because, yeah, it's breaking down, but it's not anybody's fault necessarily, right? They've just been caught up in this social tidal storm, tidal wave situation. And so that would be a pure exercise of Christian brotherhood and a great opportunity to live out that virtue of Christian brotherhood is by starting those things back up again, which might be hard. It might mean that you have to invite people over to your home for dinner a couple of times a week, you know, when you and Phoebe are married, right? Like that kind of thing. Or sacrifice time that you would watching TV, spending time with other people, doing an activity that might not necessarily even be your favorite activity, but you got to do something with these people or else they're going to be alone. And like, it's this idea of there's such a intense spiritual poverty that comes with aloneness, right? We've seen this with the even just like the priest scandal is a very dramatic example. Like when priests live alone, it's not great. It's not going well. And just in general, when anybody lives alone, it often does not go great. And so we need to have this like intense urgency about us in the same way that like when you see somebody on the street, hopefully your thought should be, what can I do for this person, right? Mm-hmm. How can I serve them? You need to have the same thing for the people who are spiritually poor, who don't have that community, who don't have that brotherhood. Like, can you imagine just growing up and you have, let's say, three brothers and one of your brothers just was always shunned by your whole family, you know? Like,
that would suck.
Like, your whole being should be like, that should revulse. Like, that should repulse you.
Yeah.
It should be upsetting and you should want to say, no, I want to include that brother in everything that we're doing. I can't believe my family would exclude him. Hopefully none of your families have done this. When you go to work, right, or you go to school, you're surrounded by hundreds of people that's their exact situation just by the culture, not necessarily by their families. It's incredible.
I will say this though, is that even though, like Jonathan Reyes was saying, just because people are starved for community doesn't mean community, they don't want it. In fact, exactly the opposite. And I realized I was part of a secular community back in high school. I did stand-up comedy, and that was a community of people who did stand-up comedy, and they were there because they enjoyed doing open mics, and they only hung out during open mics, which is fine. And there was evangelization there, at least a little bit, you know? There's a Pittsburgh open mic Facebook group. Like,
do you want to come to Mass with me? Yes, and...
yes, and... That's improv.
Oh, sorry.
improv is a cult, that's as we true. All learned Bojack from Bojack Horseman. It's especially funny watching television depict improv because most of the writers will come from an improv background, and they hit the nail on the head when it comes to improv. Like the in that episode of The Office where they do improv, Michael goes to an improv class. Every single person in that scene is an improv actor professionally, yeah. And so they just captured what it looks like.
I haven't seen that episode.
It's really funny. You should. They're great. I'll watch anyway, it. So there's three examples of a community that are communities that I've been a part of that aren't church related at all. That I didn't meet through church at all. One is a Greek reading ancient Greek
okay.
group
nerd
that meets over Zoom. Yeah, really big nerd. Open mic comedy. There's like open mic Facebook groups that people are like, oh, there's an open mic this week in the city. And then my mom is a part of a book club at Barnes & Noble. I didn't know those still existed. But yeah, they meet for like brunch
You're
sometimes.
Kidding.
It's really, yeah, it's like one of the most
Della
aesthetic
is
things
so
my mom
pure.
Does. Yeah, it's just
we
great.
We must protect
they,
your mom
like,
at
yeah,
all costs.
This book and my mom is great. And yeah, so those things still exist. Like if you like books, just read that book. They did this book exchange thing. It was like a blind date with a book. I don't know if you've ever done that before.
I've never been on a blind date.
It's blind date with a book that they wrap the book in paper and they put like a sentence on the front that's kind of like about it
and you choose it. Oh, so
yeah,
like
you pay a dollar and you
pick
a book.
You're judging the book based on its cover.
No, you're judging the book based on not its cover. You're judging the book based on a one sentence summary.
Yes. Which is better?
Yeah.
Somehow.
I mean, that's what online dating
that's
is.
That's true.
So yes, those are my thoughts on brotherhood.
I think those are really good thoughts, and I think those are like,
thank you.
I think people need to. We do talk a lot about fatherhood. We do talk a lot about sonship, but we need to fill out the trunk of that tree, or else
trunk of that tree,
or
baby.
Else it's not. You're gonna try to have the fruitfulness without the means to get there. Like if you're not a good brother, you're not gonna be a good father, and that's.
And when it comes to brotherhood among men and women, right, like. Brotherhood is important in intergender relationships because it helps people see. I mean, this is the whole Sarah Swafford emotional virtue talk. It's like you need to have your friends that are girls and you need to have your friend like you the girls need to be with the girls and the guys need to be with the guys. And then those two groups need to mix up and then they meet each other. That's like a really great way to.
And it's so much more stemming from all of this. I think it's so much easier for guys just to be with guys if they're not always with guys. Does that make sense? So like if guys and girls hang out semi-regularly, then this is why it's good to have like big families with cousins and stuff, because then you learn like this is how to interact with women and men and like all these things in these different situations, so that when you are just with dudes, not that it's like this nice reprieve from women, but it's like, okay, this is different and I can recognize the goodness of it and like soak it up. Rather than like if you're just a dude and you're always with dudes, then unless you're in seminary, in which case, God bless you. If you're always with dudes and you're just hanging out with men all the time, then it can create these really unhealthy, like sometimes to the extreme views of women or what it means to have female friends and all of that stuff, what it means to be in relationships with women. And that's not real brotherhood either. If like being friends with men to the exclusion of women, like that's not great. So.
Sorry, my mom texted me something about my marriage file. Essentially needs something from my marriage file. So that's a little bit of a source of stress.
Oh, no.
If only my phone wasn't face up.
Yes.
But yeah, my dad and my mom called me in a row. And I was like, oh, no, someone died. Like, that's what I thought. So anyway.
We can wrap this up soon. We just got to do one Dr. Ethan's Dating Corner, and then we'll get you out of here, and you can take care of your wedding.
Oh, no. We got at least another half hour. But like, well, what's another half hour?
You might have another half hour.
You don't.
No.
Okay. So but let's.
Do you have anything else to say on brotherhood? Great. That was good. Good topic. Thank you.
Let's do two, because one is the question we promised,
perfect.
And then one is an
okay,
update.
Okay. Perfect.
Cool. So this one's from Anonymous. Shout out
Anonymous.
Anonymous. I know you. Hey Ethan and Patrick. Hi. This is more of a question about breakups. I was recently dumped for being too Catholic. Whoa. This girl is not Catholic and is in my friend group of all Catholics.
Oh my gosh.
Should I stay or leave the friend group? Thanks.
How cute are the other members of this friend group? Is it worth sticking around, if you know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, you got to think about your opportunity cost here.
It's like you could leave or, I don't know, hard to say. I mean, if it's awkward, then don't hang out.
Yeah.
But if it's not awkward, then do. Like, there's no reason that you should lose five friends because one girl made a bad decision.
Yeah. See, she's mad at you for being too Catholic, but she's in a friend group. All
Catholics.
All Catholics.
Maybe she should look in the mirror. Get her on the podcast. Yeah, put it center this episode.
Maybe she needs to dump not Catholicism for being too not Catholic.
What does it mean to be too Catholic, Patrick? I feel like you've been around those folk.
Honestly, like, I would say if someone's too Catholic, they're not Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? If someone's too Catholic, that implies that there's some kind of, like, because you shouldn't be able to be too Catholic. No. You know, but I think if someone's too Catholic, that means they're, like, focused on the wrong thing and they're, like, overt. Like people that are way too traddy or, like way too into the liturgy, it's like, you're too Catholic. Yes. That's how it feels like sometimes. It's like, you're a little too, like, it's all you talk about. Yes. And you need to have, like, you know, like Christ needs to enter your life. You need life to enter your Christ. You know, like you need to have a life for Christ to enter into.
Get a life and then invite Jesus into it.
Yeah. That, I guess, I don't know. Well, first of all, like, I kind of agree with Ethan. Don't leave your friend group if they're good people, you know, especially if it's like your youth group friends that you're friends with at school and youth group. Definitely don't leave that friend group.
Yeah, I would also say
be around the girl that dumped you, and it's a little awkward.
Maybe,
you know?
Maybe unsubscribe from the Catholicism subreddit. Maybe unfollow some people on Twitter, because maybe she has a valid point. Maybe you are a bit too into the liturgy. You know, I think we're not giving this guy enough flack. Hey, chill out, right? Pope Francis is the real Pope.
I will say sometimes. Yeah, I remember I know this kid. He's
he's not crazy. Cool. Yeah. We like him.
But sometimes when you're dating someone that's not Catholic, every time you bring up your faith, it's like a sore spot for them. And you honestly, like, you might not be doing anything wrong. You might be doing something wrong. There's a right way and a wrong way to do it. You know, if you're being a little too pushy, that's not good. If you don't think you're being pushy at all, you probably weren't being pushy. So
sometimes you can talk about your faith with one group of people and it's like totally fine and normal and everybody's with it. And then you talk about your faith in the exact same way with another group of people and they can get really offended and hurt and upset. Yeah. And so that there's no easy way to navigate that. If I knew how, I would totally tell you on this podcast, but I still don't know.
And we would make a billion dollars
and everybody would say, hey, come speak at my parish. And it will give you $3,000. Nobody says that.
So here's the next one. Hello, Dr. Ethan and Professor Patrick.
Howdy.
You answered my first email about a month ago on the Jan Turnsky episode. Since then, I've met my girlfriend, Eulalia.
That's not a real name.
In person for the first time on a very, very long airport layover. That's why the first time I didn't complain about a long layover. So they met at a layover.
Okay.
We both really enjoyed our time together, and we were happy to find that we like each other just as much in person as over the internet. Also, thank you for the suggestion of fun apps to keep our video calls interesting. We'll try some of them out. I have a question, and it goes like this. How do you set healthy boundaries with friends of the opposite sex?
What?
The majority of my friends are female. Okay. The two closest are part of the same friend group as Eulalia and I, so that's fine. They feel like sisters to me, and that's how I treat them. A few others stopped initiating conversations with me, so I let those friendships drift apart. But in particular, there's one girl from my parish who reached out to me a while back, and we've hung out a few times, and we text a bit. It's platonic on my end, and I think it is for her, but I don't really know how to tell for sure. Maybe the fact that she's willing to hang out in a group that includes her brother as well as alone is a good sign. For whatever reason, making friends with girls seems to come easier to me than befriending guys. There are only two guys I've found so far that I can relate to. I'm praying that I will find several more when I go to college. Of course, I'll be meeting plenty of girls in college, too, and I'd like to know how to set myself up for healthy friendships. Announcing something to the effect of, I've got a girlfriend, but I'm okay with you as a friend, seems a bit on the nose. Thanks and God bless, Malachi.
Yeah, but it can't go wrong, you know? Like,
Whoa, wait. Wasn't Malachi the guy with the... No. That wasn't the guy that we cringed for an hour about, right?
That was Eleazar.
That's right.
I think...
Stop using Old Testament.
I think the best thing is to walk into every single room and just say, have girlfriend.
May have
attention
girlfriend.
Dating. everybody, ting ting. I'm gonna do this at your wedding. Everybody, ting ting ting. I got a girlfriend. Carry on. Get back to your thing. Eat
Carry
that chicken.
On. Go nuts. What do you think? What are your thoughts?
Oh man, it's hard to set specifics because each relationship is so different. I would say let's say you have a girlfriend, right? Whoever this Ulysses S. Grant woman is that you met in the airport. What was her name? Yulu Layla? What is ukulele?
Yoko Layla.
Yoko Ono. You met Yoko Ono in the airport, and she went. Hey. You ever heard her sing, Yoko Ono? It's terrifying.
No.
It's not great. She sounds like what I just did before.
She's still alive. What if she's listening to this episode?
Oh, no. Yoko Ono, if you're listening to this.
You just offended Yoko Ono. You just offended the best.
I actually feel no remorse about offending Yoko Ono. She'll be fine. So you met this girl. You like her. Let's say you start dating and you don't want to walk into every room that you go into and yell that you have a girlfriend. I would just say, like, just don't flirt with other women. And you can't control what they do, right? And so just, like, if they're texting you, yeah, you can respond. But if they're, like, trying to have, like, long conversations with you via text that, like, don't necessarily, like, it's not, like, pertinent information. Like, sometimes my female friends would text me, like, hey, just updating you on this or the other thing. Like, hey, I miss you. Like, how are you doing? That kind of thing. Like, yeah, it's cool. But if it's, like, a regular, like, they want to have frequent conversations with you via text message or they want to hang out in a group or alone frequently, then that's probably like a sign of like maybe there needs to be, if it's in a group, there needs to be multiple people kind of initiating. It shouldn't just be one girl saying, hey, I'm hanging with this group, do you want to come? Because that means she likes you and she wants to, in general, maybe not always, but I would just be wary anytime that the girl is doing a lot of initiation. And on your end, it's up to you to like set the tone. If you're not texting back and if you're not initiating lots of conversations, unless it needs to like happen, say like, hey, are we getting together at the calf tonight? You know, that kind of thing. Like, you can do that.
We're getting together in the Lululemon.
You're getting together
lounge.
In the Lululemon lounge. Like, you can do things like that, but don't flirt with her. Don't be cute. Like, there's no reason to be cute. No reason to be sending smiley faces and winky faces to other women besides Ulysses S. Grant. Like,
don't send a parenthesis unless you're adding a parenthesis.
Exactly.
That, no emoticons.
I would say that's a good general baseline. What do you think, Pat?
I think that's a good point. Honestly, you can't really do much about someone thinking you might have a thing. You can't do so much about something.
Come on, you got it.
You can't really, if they have a crush on you, you can't do
anything
about it. That's
correct. You know, that's not your fault.
Yeah, it's not your
You're
fault.
You're awesome.
And just, yeah, they should. No, I'm just kidding. And you can really only just keep them at the place where they should be. I mean, we talked about this with the Eleazar episode. I hope he didn't stop listening. Yeah. God bless that man. You can't, like, don't intimately share parts of your life with them.
And don't even let it get to the point of that. We were talking earlier today of like somebody asked me, hey, Ethan, like what percentage does your best friend, like what percentage of you does your best friend know about you? And I was like, well, in college, my best friend probably knew 90 to 95% about me. You know, now it's probably less than that because I share more with my girlfriend than I do with my best guy friend from college, even though we still talk all the time, you know, which is probably good and correct. No one's going to 100% know me until I'm married with them. And I think that's how it should be. And so I think thinking about like how much of myself am I revealing to this person? And is that like good for where I'm at with them? Like if it's a solid dude friend, you can share a lot of yourself with that person. That's fine. Like, and you guys should love each other and be Christian brothers. But if it's a lady, not that there's like a number on the percentage scale, but just do a quick like check and be like, what percentage of like myself and my thoughts does this girl know? And if it's a lot, if it's more than like 60%, maybe chill. And then Definitely. Learn a bunch of new stuff. So the percentage goes down.
Just do a bunch of new things. Like pick up a new hobby.
Don't tell her. Why do you have this? Why do you have this African dulcimer in your room? I can't tell you. It's not important.
I can't tell you. Don't look at it. Don't look. That's another. That's just, another percentage point. No. Ah! I was at 59. You fool. Oh man, that's good. Right. I like that. Sweet.
Wow, we did it. This was not as hard as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Two episodes in 1 week. I'm so glad we don't do this every week.
Yeah, that would be tough.
It would be. So
patnevy.blog, patreon.com.
Do you want to throw your wedding registry up in the description? Is it too?
Yeah,
is it too late for that?
The knot.com. It's never too late for a wedding registry. The knot.com/Patrick and Phoebe.
There it is, baby.
Not Phoebe and Patrick. That one takes you to a different Patrick.
Yes,
and Phoebe.
That happened to me.
Patrick.com/Patrick and Phoebe.
Cool. is there anything else that you need from me or my audience? Our audience.
Just watch for the store launch. Watch for.
Are you gonna launch the store while you're on your honeymoon? That'd be very funny.
Well, no.
And on brand.
It might launch without me on the honeymoon, which would be funny. Watch for the store launch. Watch for. I have something that's not the book, but it is about brotherhood and masculinity. That's coming out soon with Catholic Beard Bomb. That's next month or 2 months from now. Yeah, that's it.
Cool. Patrick, do you have anything else for the people?
Having fun isn't hard when you've got a chastity card. 5 chastity cards.
Thank you all for listening. Please pray for us. We will be praying for you, and we'll see you all next week.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.